This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Russell, and today we have BFM's very own Sharmila Ganesan.
Hello, and thank you.
Great to have you back. And we have the return of, he's been an actor.
Very much so, thank you.
And a senior advertising man, Vernon Adrian Among.
Thank you very much, Cam.
Great to have you back. And our three topics this week are, topic number one is
Movie milestones,
number one. Topic number two is, what are we watching when we watch foreign movies? Mm-hmm. And finally, topic number three is the rise of comic Malaysia. So, Sharmila, movie milestones.
So, you know, the big event that's happening this week is Avengers Endgame has come out. Mm-hmm. I've watched all of them. I'm definitely a fan of the series. It got me thinking about how, actually, as these movies have come out over the course of, I think, more than 10 years, they've kind of become a part of people's lives. They've definitely become a part of mine. And I find myself sort of marking events and things and people and places because of the time that it has taken and because of how significant each release of the movie, each movie release is, they become such a part of your life's milestones. So the movies are milestones in themselves, but they also kind of fit themselves into your life. I mean, for me personally, I've been through two relationships in the time of, including one marriage, in the time of this grand saga of Marvel movies. I've mm-hmm. moved jobs, I've moved countries, and I can actually remember, you know, like, oh, I watched Civil War when I was living in the States. I watched, Thor 2 with that particular person. My cousins were toddlers when we first watched Iron Man, and now they're in college. It's like an odd, perhaps not college, they're in secondary school. But still, you know, it feels to me like, and not many other movies, I think, have had this amount of time, but still connected with this thread. And that was just interesting to me.
It would just be the Star Wars.
Yeah, kind of.
I don't think anybody thinks Star Trek.
Because it's TV as well, right? So that's a little bit more consistent. Yeah. But with Avengers also, because with Star Wars, there were the three films, and then people kept watching them over, you know, decades. Mm. But with Avengers, they're also new films, right? So there's that significance of waiting for, oh, here's Captain America, and, you know, here's this, and here's the first Avengers, here's the second Avengers, here's the third.
Do we know how many movies this has been? Marvel cycle. Actually, I've lost count.
Well over 20.
My goodness, really, that many?
Yeah.
And I think I've seen them all somehow.
I've seen them all, definitely.
Well, you know, this is the thing. I mean, I used to be a comic book fan, actually using tracing paper to trace out the superheroes when I was in primary school. So in terms of the comic book heroes, definitely milestones in the life of, in my childhood and in my kind of like early teenage years. But I kind of like, not really into action movies, so it's never really made such an impact on me.
Do you have equivalents though, in terms of movies?
Good God, no, not really. But I can see how it can be and should be, because every launch of the movie is a huge social event, isn't it?
It is. And got me thinking about how, you know, even more so, I think, you know, perhaps in the generation before mine, or when I was a child, things like Jurassic Park, these were huge event movies, and they would run in cinemas. I remember that I watched in Rec Scale, and it would run there for what seemed like months, and people waited for it, for the chance to go and watch it. Yep. And I remember going, and I have memories of that.
Mm. I thought it was very interesting with the Star Wars cycle, when they were releasing the movie in China, China obviously had no history, no memory
of the previous things.
Yep, yep. So they released the movie in China several months later, and they had its own particular events around it and advertising, etc., because they had to inculcate a tradition to people who had no tradition.
Yes.
But also they could drop certain traditions that may have existed in the minds of people who watched it back in 77 and then sell it as a new film. So I don't actually know exactly what marketing ploy they took in the end. I should look into it, because it's fascinating. How do you create a culture and a history when there is no culture and history?
I suppose just, I mean, I would think that with Star Wars, just sell the space adventure and the special effects. And these tend to work in developing markets like China and India, where they don't connect so much to that history, but they just want a fun movie experience. Yeah. But but that idea of memories being tied to movies are very significant.
And it makes me kind of wonder, like, you know, the big marketing machine actually kind of like, in a sense, determines our memories.
Our memories, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Shocking, I know. But I was talking to a friend of mine. He was very au fait with the marketing and the, the creative decisions being made by the producers. Because one thing that really gets me is that with these Avenger series is that the actors themselves are getting older.
Yes.
And so how long can they remain, for instance, as, say, Spider-Man?
Mm-hmm.
Because Spider-Man must be eternally young.
Well, Spider-Man, we've had more than one Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So I think that can kind of can be excused in some ways.
No, but then they play the same character.
So it came,
you know, the
they same, rebooted the character in the shows, in the movies.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah. He was explaining how they intend to play it in real time. So when the actor, he was saying, gets older or gets disinterested, then they can drop out. And that is the end of that character. But as with the comic books that you read, for
yes.
many years later, they can
revive them.
They can revive them. They have a new outfit.
Yeah.
It's a new person. But they don't have to do that tedious thing of doing the Genesis story all over again like they do with Spider-Man. Each time there's a new one. It's like
one would hope. Yeah. Because for some reason, they can't seem to drop that trope. But something like Game of Thrones actually tends to just ignore it because technically, in the story, those children shouldn't have aged very much at all because it happens over the course of a year or two.
Right.
But because the show has been filming for, I think, a good 6 years, the children have gone from being 10 to children in their late teens. Hmm. But the show just kind of ignores that and continues just...
As if it was just last Tuesday.
As if this child just matured, you know, for
no reason. I'm just sitting here with my jaw in my lap because... Game of Thrones is another particular cultural phenomenon that I'm so not into. Oh my God. It has been.
You're the ultimate hipster.
Just to conclude then. So as of recording this show right now, Shamina, you have not watched.
I have not, but I have tickets to watch Endgame tonight. And I'm very excited.
How excited? Wow.
I'm very excited because, and I'm very excited. I'm watching it with my siblings and a cousin, which is very important to me because, you know, I talked about people dropping out of my life in this journey. My siblings and my cousins have been there. And this is one of those things that hold us together.
Yeah.
Like they're about 8 of us at this point, you know, and we all talk about it when we get together. I remember when they were kids, we would say, okay, you're Captain America, you're Iron Man, you know, you're whoever. And so it's a big thing for me.
Are you going to cry? Are you going to cry?
I think I might. I've cried at a lot of them.
So it's very much a calendar marker of stuff.
It is.
I mean, like, every Christmas, families come together, any kind
every,
of festivity.
And for us, every right? Avenger movie release, my family comes together.
Wow, new tradition.
It's a religion that I'm not a part of.
Yeah, yeah. Well, well, Vernon, you're a sad man.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I don't know how to sugarcoat it. But we must move on then. So topic number 2 is, what are we watching when we watch foreign movies? Because I, in recent years, I've been watching a lot of Korean movies.
I know what I'm watching when watching foreign movies.
Okay, well, wait a second. So I watch a lot of Korean movies, and I really like them. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
Just to clarify, Sharman and I were misunderstanding.
Because I thought you meant K-dramas.
No.
Yeah.
I do not mean...
You mean film.
I mean film, not
right,
TV.
Right, yeah, on the big screen.
Yeah, TV, Korean TV is just plain silly. but I really love them, but I have no intention... No desire to go to Korea ever. Mm-hmm. When I watch them, there's nothing in particular within Korean society that make me think, oh, I wish we had that. And it's not like I really care about the future of South Korean democracy, etc.
You don't?
No.
Why are you doing any of this, Cam?
Why indeed? I mean, I am not invested in Korea emotionally at all. So why indeed am I watching them? Because I'm watching this totally foreign landscape and movies in a very different meter and a very different rhythm, structure even, and characters who are unfamiliar, tropes that are unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, in Korean movies, if a man turns up at the beginning of the movie and he's, let's say, in his 60s, He may, or 100% of the time, he may seem like a good guy at the beginning. He's going to be the bad guy by the end. Never trust anyone over 60 seems to be.
Okay. This is Korean movie 101 for me because I'm not extremely familiar.
Well, that's the thing. So, and Shamini, you grew up watching Indian cinema.
Yeah. But for me, Indian cinema is not foreign cinema.
Right.
Yeah, right? For me, because my family's Indian. Yep. Well, we're Malaysian, culturally, ethnically, we're Indian. And to me, it's not foreign film at all. In fact, I think it's as ubiquitous as Hollywood, maybe more. So,
But Hollywood's foreign as well.
Hollywood is foreign, right? We act like it's not, but it's not our culture. And,
yeah. But so when you're watching, when you were watching, and you watched so much that you actually taught yourself how to speak Hindi.
By watching Bollywood,
which is quite remarkable. Yeah. You're watching these Bombay dramas.
Yes.
What is that landscape to you?
I think as a second culture, a third culture kid, and partly the other thing is there isn't a cohesive Malaysian cinema to identify oneself with. Mm. So you don't see yourself on screen anywhere else. So watching something like Bollywood, even if it's so outlandish and fairly unrealistic for a lot of people, it's a sense of connection. So Indian cinema, for me, it's that.
Right. So that's like local. It was like local then.
It was the closest I had to local.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Cultural identification.
Right.
Because of the language and some of the lifestyle practices.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Vernon, have you ever immersed yourself in foreign movies?
Immersed myself. I watch them. I'm very open to watching them. But I know what I watch and I'm watching.
What are you receiving? What's it doing?
I'm watching
for
the subtitles.
Well, you can watch Malaysian movies and watch plenty of subtitles.
Yeah, correct. Three decks of it. Yeah. What am I watching? I guess the imaging of a particular reality. Mm. I find that usually quite interesting.
A different reality. Someone else is reality.
It doesn't even have to be culturally different. But like, I'm trying to think like some of the French movies, for instance. Rooms look, I mean, you know, normal, but the way angles, I don't know, usually, yes, the imaging, I think for me.
There's a difference.
There is a different way of seeing things.
Mm. So I think I completely agree because for me, I feel like when I watch foreign cinema, I'm actually watching it on a completely different plane or you know, with a different frame of mind.
Yeah.
Than I am when I'm watching, say, Hollywood or Bollywood in this case, because I am watching it because I want that insight into a different culture, a different point of view. Mm. And you know, if I were to objectively compare a French comedy and a Hollywood one, I would probably think the French one is not as entertaining. Mm. However, I'm judging it by a different standard. Mm-hmm. I'm not watching it to be entertained as a comedy. I'm watching it to understand what comedy is like in a different culture.
Anthropology.
Well, that's quite interesting because based on what culture I am, which is, as you know,
is whatever, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Right? So I guess every movie to me is a different cultural perspective.
Yeah.
What about Malaysian movies?
What about Malaysia? I mean, like there's Malay movies and then there's Yasmin Ahmad. I mean, of course, I identify with Yasmin Ahmad more than anything else. Mm. To me, that's truthful Malaysia. Does that answer your question?
Well, yeah. I find when I'm watching the foreign movies, I am constantly aware of their foreignness, but I'm also then constantly aware of the fact that why am I choosing the Korean one and not the Malaysian one? Because when I do watch the Malaysian movie, I find it very, very often quite frightening in a way.
Malaysian movie.
Disturbing to me because here is a Malaysian film. Mm-hmm. I am Malaysian. Mm-hmm. And then I'm watching something made by and for an audience that clearly, when I watch the movie, I have no connection with whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And these are my neighbors, and I could well be related as well. And it's frightening for me to find my alienness reinforced with every single frame.
Yes.
Whereas if it's the Korean movie, it's like, I'm alien to this.
You know something?
No big deal. I can be outside looking in.
It just reminds me of how, I don't know when I've talked about this before on the show, but it's something that has kind of like really stuck with me. The first time I arrived in Australia for my secondary and university education, whenever I was at public places, I felt I was eavesdropping on conversations. Because I could understand everything that everybody's saying. And it was, for me, it was like quite discomforting.
I find the same whenever I travel, say, back to England.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, one, I can understand what they're saying, and two, because I grew up there, I can really understand what they're saying. And I find, like you say, it's like I have a superpower.
Yeah,
what's
exactly.
going on? I can hear through walls. It's like, what's going on? This isn't right.
It's almost like what we are saying is that, especially when it comes to something like Malaysian cinema, a lot of these scenarios, we're okay feeling foreign watching something that is foreign. Mm, but then when you watch something that you're supposed to feel like you belong to, but you don't, that's uncomfortable.
Yes.
And because I identify with that. There's a distress in not finding that belonging when you should be, technically.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's the point that's the point I'm trying to get to.
Not only am I has been, I'm in constant distress.
Oh my God.
Right. Well, and in a moment you're going to relieve your own distress, because we're going to be talking about the rise of comic Malaysia in a moment here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Shamila Ganesan, and Vernon Adrian Among. Mm-hmm. And now, Vernon, the rise of comic Malaysia.
Indeed. In the past couple of weeks, since International Women's Day, when was that, by the way? In March. I came to this very building to watch Pompuan, which was a collection of a group of female stand-up comedians. And I was just blown away by how fun it was. Mm. And then just around the corner is a place called Crack House Comedy Club. And I've been there several times recently and love what's going on there. I think there's a community thriving. And in the space of like the last 2 weeks, I saw Poon Chi Ho here in this very same building. Mm-hmm. And I'm about to see Alan Pereira's Malaysia's Got No Shame show tonight. And I'm thinking to myself, is this a sign of something? Are we, because of what happened almost 9 years ago, more confident and feel we can laugh at ourselves, right? So is that what's happening? Almost a year ago.
Oh, right, okay.
May 9th, sorry.
I thought I missed something.
Me too. I thought, I think, should I keep quiet with the charm a little bit? Sorry.
I'm so happy to hear that you're listening to me. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Almost a year ago on May 9th, we changed our government. And is it because, we're really confident and we can laugh at ourselves? We're happy to take a dig at each other and everything else around us? The myth of, well, not so much the myth, but the phenomenon of the court jester, where in a feudal, monarchy, there was this thing called the court jester, who was the only one who was allowed to make fun.
To speak the truth.
Yeah. And to make fun of even royalty, and so I was thinking about is this kind of like signifying perhaps Malaysia growing up, coming to terms with the fact that perhaps feudalism isn't the right thing to be, clinging to.
That went big really fast.
Yeah, didn't it? Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, first of all, I would just say that these stand-up comics that you're talking about have all been in the pipeline and working away, plugging away for quite some time, long before the GE14.
True. But quietly, maybe.
I would say it's been a slow sort of renaissance. Mm-hmm. But I think that in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, we've also, the one thing that's actually spurred a lot of this is the venues. Mm. So the rise of comedy clubs, so that you're no longer seeing them at functions
pubs.
And at pubs or, as an opening act for something, that you can actually go to a dedicated venue to see them has made it a lot more visible as well. And people are doing collectives and things like the rise of YouTube videos to promote their work.
Yes.
But I do agree that, these last couple of years, and particularly after May 9th, there have been just like such a slew of events coming up, and every week there's a comedy show to go to, which I think is very exciting.
Yeah, very.
But you, both of you have been to quite a few. What's the quality?
Pretty much worth your money. Could be better, but I think we're kind of like trying to find our feet as to what really, really works with what is a really fragmented society, of course the idea that you can take the Mickey out of something, I find having conversations with friends, some people find some of the humor kind of like disturbing or inappropriate, so I think we ourselves are trying to deal with our own psyches and insecurities.
Shamila, how have you found that?
I maybe am a little less optimistic at the moment. I enjoy a lot of it. I feel like they're still finding, you know, you rightfully said, they're still finding that identity. A lot of them are still caught between trying to sound like what they hear. We don't have a stand-up culture. Stand-up culture is not sort of native, if I may call it that, to these parts of the world. So they're still sort of deriving a lot of things from what they see abroad. And then it's being coupled with the kind of humor that we've already heard a lot of from, I suppose, sketch comedy, a lot of the sort of the race jokes and those kinds of humor that we're familiar with. I've yet to find, there are a couple of people like Jason Leong, actually, who I find are innovating and doing new things.
And taking it personal. I think the comics work really well when their stories come from a personal, you know, from a personal place.
Because it's relatable.
Well, and that's when...
Kwa Jen Hang, I think, is... good example of that.
Example
of that.
So I do think that the perhaps now, because there's so many of them, there's also more of a push to better yourself, and you can no longer get away with redoing acts that someone else. There was a phase where everyone was doing Russell Peters. Everyone was just trying to be a Malaysian Russell Peters.
And I don't like Russell Peters.
I'm glad we're over that phase.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that the competition actually encourages much more innovation.
I think that the economics of it needs to be pointed out, that it's very expensive to make a movie. And it's very expensive to make television. In a lot of countries, a lot of people would be going to TV to put out this kind of work. In this country, our TV doesn't pay too well. It doesn't get too much of an audience. But stand-up is a very cheap thing to do. It's one person, one microphone. There's no band. There's no backing singers. And then if you get a bunch of stand-ups, I mean, you just got to pay five people. You don't pay five people for one full night's worth of entertainment. And I think that might be one of the reasons why people are gravitating towards stand-up in middle-class Klang Valley, because it's a one form of entertainment that we can actually financially sustain.
I do agree when Vernon said worth your money. I mean, it's difficult to define, but you're right, because you pay what is a relatively small sum for, a fairly entertaining. I mean, it's rarely bad. You rarely go and feel, I didn't laugh, I wish I hadn't come. But if you thought about
You're quite forgiving. And you know what, talking about this, the economics of a stand-up production, and I'm thinking, like, is stand-up the live version of cooking shows on TV? You know, because one guy, some ingredients, one camera.
You rely on one person's talent.
It's even cheaper. It's even cheaper
than
that.
You don't need the ingredients.
Yeah, you feed the crew after that.
I'm presently at this very moment working with Joko Gathas too, and some other people to put out a play that she's about to do. The stuff that you've been watching, what is the ratio percentage of political jokes, Malaysian local political jokes, to social jokes? I mean, by social jokes, I mean, like, you know, Indians like this, or racial stuff, gender stuff, what have you. I mean, how is the tackling of political stories?
Hardly ever.
Yeah?
It's fairly rare, I think. Much less than, say, an Indian Allen sketch, which I would say is quite heavily political, or even Joe Kukatas's sort of personas. I feel like a lot of the stand-up comedians steer fairly clear of making directly political jokes and are much more socio-political.
Because you think that they're not interested, or it's a dangerous topic. I think maybe just not interested.
Yeah, not interested, or don't feel
nothing new to say, perhaps.
Haven't taken a position.
Perhaps.
You know, a really firm position, a really firm political position to be able to lampoon or, you know, certain things that,
Okay, we'll move on. So Vernon, basically, thumbs up to, you say, two thumbs up to...
Or three.
Three thumbs up.
And all your toes.
Okay, so you're really excited by this.
I am, in that, you know, I think what it does is any kind of, like, personal expression, has the ability to ignite conversations. So I think we need to talk with each other more.
Okay. So that's The Rise of Comic Malaysia. Go check your listings for for, I need to say, there are so many.
You're fine.
And check out
Facebook.
Joe Kukutatsu's Instant Cafe production coming up as well.
Yes, a little plug there.
A little plug there. Tickets are selling very fast. So we now move on to the final part of the show, recommendations. We recommend something we think might be of interest. And Sharmila goes first.
Sure. Well, today I'm going to recommend newnarrative.com.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's a I suppose it's a long-form journalistic platform. And the reason I find it so interesting is because it was founded by these three Singaporeans, Ping Jin Tham, who's an academic, Kirsten Han, who is a journalist, and Sunny Liu, who is a comic artist. And they go by a subscription model where people pay a subscription fee, and that's how the whole thing is run. It's run completely transparently. So they actually list on their website where your money goes, how much they pay their writers. It's just hitting, I think, about 2 years since they started it. A great platform.
Already?
It's already been 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And caveat, I do write for them once in a while, but even if I didn't, I would completely follow them because their articles are great. Mm. And it's Southeast Asia, which I think is very rare.
Yeah.
There are not enough platforms that I think bring together content and stories from Southeast Asia, and they have a real interest in doing things like translation. So they often translate any article that's about Malaysia, for instance, into Bahasa Malaysia as well. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to do that with the other regional languages. Great content. I love long form reading.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to have something that is regional to read about. Mm. And yes, I would recommend to anyone.
I agree. I didn't know a subscription. I've read quite a lot of New Narrative, and I haven't paid a penny.
So they do have an interesting thing where, because they also need to get interest, if someone shares a link with you, which also includes if someone shares a link on Facebook. So if I have a subscription and then I put that link on my Facebook, if you're my friend, you can read it. Mm. Or if I email it to you, you can read it
that
as
must
well.
Be
yeah.
Okay.
But the idea is
the website as well looked up.
And I didn't know Sunny Liu was part of it. Which
Sunny
is
Liu
wonderful.
Was one of the original founders.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Sorry, Sunny Liu is famous.
He's a comic book artist. Right. He did The Art of Charlie Chan Hok Chai.
Which is amazing. Which is quite a remarkable.
Which
book.
Is an amazing.
Which is
yes.
worth recommending in itself.
Oh yeah, I think yeah.
So that's New Narrative.
Yes.
New Narrative.
New Narrative with an F.
Mm-hmm.
It's newnarative.com.
Yeah, it's very good, very good. Mm-hmm. So my recommendation is a short while ago, I actually recommended this historian by the name of Anthony Reed, one of, if not the historian of this region. And I was in Kinokuniya the other day walking along, and there was a book by him. Printed by University Malaya Press.
Mm.
And they've just it's very recent, they re-released his thesis from 1969, his PhD thesis. It's The Contest for North Sumatra. And it's about Aceh and the Dutch and British vying over Aceh in the 19th century.
Right.
And Aceh was deemed to be, after the Treaty of London, Treaty of Pankow, deemed to be part of the Dutch sphere.
Mm-hmm.
But the British had such commercial interest there that it sort of like was being pulled toward Penang.
Mm-hmm.
But also Aceh was full of these independent principalities. And then the Dutch eventually came along, a war, which was almost genocidal war, to capture Aceh. And it's a whole aspect of history, which I really don't know much about. So I'm reading the book now, and it's like, oh my God, never knew that.
So light weekend read. Then.
Yeah. But he's even when he wrote this back in 69, when he was at University of Malaya, he was a young man. Great writer, really well researched.
The name again?
The Contest for North Sumatra.
And the writer?
Anthony Reed.
So does it read like a thesis, or is it an exciting read?
Does it read like a thesis? Is it an exciting read? I don't know.
Is it illustrated?
Is it comics?
there's a picture on the cover. I don't know. I've read so many history books now that I guess I judge excitement by
content.
Content by the filling in of information gaps in my knowledge.
Okay.
So it's not like and then he took his Chris and he dashed out and I don't know. it's not Game of Thrones kind of thing, but. Aceh is very important to our history, and I personally don't know enough about it.
That's interesting because, I mean, like, my ancestral home is Penang, and, you know, it'd be, I'll look it up and see.
I mean, Penang, British and also, Penang's historical importance is also as good as life gone. So that's my one. Vernon?
Well, I would like to recommend Crack House Comedy Club. Crack House Comedy Club in Taman Tun, Dr. Ismail. It's been here for, I think, almost kind of like almost 10 years.
Celebrating their 10th anniversary this year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the festival, right?
That's
happening on right now. It's on the first floor of a shop lot, intermediate shop lot. When you enter, it feels like some campus, some university kind of like hangout, because it's not exactly stylish and, you know. But it's got a really nice warm vibe. And the stuff that goes on there, I mean, the range of stuff that goes on there, from improv nights to what they called first crack, when established comedians actually try out new material. And it's actually very funny to watch. It's cheap because you're guinea pigs as audience members. Mm. But it's very funny to watch because you watch these established comics deal with a bomb gag, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
And how they move on. And
That's a great idea.
Mm.
I love that we have this live comedy venues now.
Yes.
It's so much potential, so many things that happen. And I love the idea.
Different kinds of comedy presentations. Wonderful.
You're talking about the rise of Comedy Malaysia, but we're also talking about the rise of Taman Tun, Dr. Ismail. a lot of things are happening in Taman Tun.
It's very happening. Yeah.
Okay, so that's the Crack House in Taman Tun, Dr. Ismail.
Yes, correct.
Right. So, that brings us to the end of this week's show. Only remains me now.
Shame.
Well, you could say. Means me now to thank Sharmila Ganathan.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners should definitely check out her
Front Row if you like the arts, or buy the book if you like books.
Great shows and so the enormous bit of culture listenership will now gravitate toward.
Thank you
And if you and if you could return the favor, I would really appreciate it. Thank you. And thank you very much to Vernon Adrian Amon.
Thank you, Cam,
special honored guest. And please enjoy the new Malaysia, and join us next week for another exciting episode of Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.